From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The nation's media landscape has dramatically changed in the past few weeks. It started with news of the online sites Gothamist and DNA Info being shut down by their billionaire owner Joe Ricketts after workers there unionized. The shuttered sites included local Southern California news site LAist. Then we heard the bombshell news of longtime OC Weekly writer turned editor-in-chief Gustavo Arellano resigning from his position after refusing to lay off a chunk of his staff. The LA Weekly was then taken over by mysterious new owners that also laid off a number of staff. To top it all off, news reports have emerged of a Koch brothers company buying a stake in Time magazine. All of this has happened while the Federal Communications Commission removed its ban on media cross-ownership, opening the door to more consolidation. And of course, we're now seeing the likely demise of net neutrality, which benefits independent online media. Is our media landscape being completely taken over by the billionaires of the nation, leaving behind good journalists to wonder where their talents will be used? Well, I'm very pleased to welcome to our program Gustavo Arellano, the former editor-in-chief of the OC Weekly. And he started out there as a food critic and the writer of a satirical advice column called Ask a Mexican, for which he received fame far and wide. He eventually turned the column into an acclaimed book by the same name. His other books include Orange County, A Personal History, and Taco USA, How Mexican Food Conquered America. He's done many more things that we don't have time to get into right now. Welcome to the program, Gustavo.
Gracias for having me, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. So this is the first time you and I have spoken since your bombshell resignation, I think is a good way to put it.
Yeah.
And you made it very clear that you did so because you did not want to be the one to lay off half your staff. How do you put what happened to you into the context of all these other stories that we're seeing coming out?
I hope that in my case, it was an isolated incident, and it's not what some people have claimed, which is it's part of a bigger conspiracy by conservative owners to really quash progressive independent voices. The owner of OC Weekly is a Newport Beach yacht millionaire whose politics are Republican, but in his case, he claimed to me at least that, you know, it was all about the money. And hey, so far, or maybe it was something personal, because so far he hasn't laid off half the staff the way he wanted me to do so. And it was about 2 months ago that I resigned.
So even if it may not be some conspiracy where people are, you know, there's some sort of Republican conservative takeover, there seems to be a pattern of consolidation where these days, because newspapers have, you know, been these profit-making entities that conservatives or other, in general, billionaires and money makers are applying their corporate model to the news, right?
Oh, this is something that's been going on for decades. I mean, with the start of the Gannett papers, the people who created USA Today and just buying all these once independent publications all across the United States, making them into chains, really going away from the model of journalism, what journalism is supposed to be, and making it into a business like no other. The journalism industry was notorious in that if you didn't make profit margins of 20% a year, you were considered to be a failure. And of course, those days are long over, but it's been a lot of this, as I argued in a piece I wrote for Reason Magazine, specifically about alt weeklies, a lot of this is self-inflicted by these owners. Us on the ground, not just editors, but especially reporters, we knew and we know what's going on, sort of what's ailing news, especially on an ad-driven model, the way alt weeklies are and a lot of stuff online, but no one ever pays attention to us. Instead, you get these rich Uncle Pennybags who think they know how to make money, and then they wonder why they're not making money, because they're not paying attention to the people on the ground.
And so this issue of how weeklies were taken over is a really important framework, because there was a time when OC Weekly, LA Weekly, all of these weekly newspapers in cities around the country were sort of relatively independent. They weren't owned like how we have radio consolidation today, where you've got, you know, big companies just having cookie cutter stations around the country. Similarly, that wasn't the case in the news business, news alt weekly business, but then we've had this complete change in ownership. But as far as I understood, at least where OC Weekly was concerned, editorial control still remained pretty independent, right?
Absolutely. It's interesting how it works out, because at one point in the 1980s, Rupert Murdoch himself owned the Village Voice, and he left editorial content alone. Like, it's an apocryphal, or however you say that word, incident, but supposedly that Murdoch said, "I don't know how you communists make so much money." And so he left the stories alone. So as long as there's some sort of, at least you'd think, but on the other hand, as long as you have some sort of money making in the process, the owners don't really care. On the other hand, LA Weekly was making money. And I know this for a fact because they were a sister paper. The OC Weekly from our former corporate owners, Voice Media Group, VMG, they would always point to LA Weekly as a model of success. And of course, we were making money as well, but they were making way more money. And now, even though that model was making money for LA Weekly, the new owners, a bunch of wannabe libertarians, they came and they laid off 70% of the staff. They basically laid off every person on editorial except one guy, Hillel Aron, who's now the editor-in-chief of LA Weekly.
And on this issue of the LA Weekly, there was a really bizarre online post for a few days where the writers basically said, "We don't even know who owns our paper anymore." And it was a really bizarre moment where people were wondering, wow, what sort of a world are we living in? And now we know that it was a company named Seminel Media Group, and the owners have come forward and said, "We're really sorry. We had a lot of missteps. We didn't mean for it to be so clumsy, but everything's going to be okay." What do you think?
No. It's all a bunch of OC bros is what it is. OC, again, neocon bros, led by a guy named Brian Calle, however you pronounce it. He used to be in charge of the editorial pages of the Orange County Register, the notoriously conservative, anti-democracy paper. And even if intelligent minds can disagree on political ideologies, but in Calle's case, just last year, in 2016 alone, he had one editorial where his paper argued that NFL cheerleaders should not be considered employees because they get perks like hanging out with millionaires, meaning the players. He had the Orange County Register, in another case, they wrote an entire editorial chastising a guy named Don Wagner for running against State Senator John Morlach, except that Don Wagner wasn't running against John Morlach. And then in another case, they endorsed a state assemblywoman and talked all sorts of trash against her opponent, except the opponent wasn't her opponent. He was not even in the general election. So this is a guy who's sloppy, and this is the guy who's now in charge of LA Weekly. You can't have any trust. And by the way, he never apologized for anything except the cheerleader thing, and it was a really wishy-washy apology. So can we really trust someone like that? Absolutely not.
So how important is it for the people who work at these papers to know who the owners are? Because this is a critical issue that doesn't come up very much, especially from the people who consume the media.
Oh, it's absolutely important. To me, it was also unconscionable and immoral to have these LA Weekly employees not only not know if they're going to keep their jobs, but not know who the person is in charge. And so at least you could try to make a case. At least with anyone who works for anyone, they want to know who's their owners. You want to know if you're working for a Koch brothers. You want to know if your supposed savior is really the person they make themselves out to be. And so that's why, I don't know, I think with journalists, our only way, I mean, you cannot depend on the Jeff Bezos of the world. You cannot depend on these corporations to say, "We're going to like keep your jobs safe." I would argue you can't even depend on unions anymore. LA Weekly was unionized. The new owners decimated the union. They flat out killed it, although now they're saying they're going to try to bring it back. Again, I'll believe it when I see it. So at this point, I wonder if there's going to be more journalists who are going to try to think of some sort of cooperative where, look, if we're not going to be able to trust the owners, well, we could trust ourselves, so we might as well be our own owners at this point.
And in the case of the online sites, Gothamist and DNA Info, it did appear that Joe Ricketts, the billionaire owner, likely shuttered these websites because the staff unionized, right?
Absolutely. So, and that's the thing. We've been talking about newspapers. Now, supposedly, the next way forward was digital-only, online-based, or advertiser-based websites like BuzzFeed and Vice and all those. And even those people are not making the money they're supposed to. And even those people are going to be laying off dozens of people pretty soon, according to media reports. So if they can't make a run at it with advertiser-supported content, and not just that, but listicles and cheap hits, if that's not going to succeed online, then really what is? And I think that's a big question that a lot of reporters are asking right now, both those who have been laid off, but also those who still have a job. There is no certainty anymore in journalism. There is no, all people ever talk about is brands this and, you know, listicle that and what do they call it, sponsored content. None of that leads, though, to a good, independent, progressive voice in journalism. It just doesn't.
And on that issue, there was a brief moment when there was a fear that the LA Weekly would be turning into a sort of paper version of the Huffington Post, where some feared that there was going to be a call, they saw a call for free media content. And you can sort of blame the Huffington Post a little bit for that, right? For pushing this model of free or extremely low paid content, quantity over quality.
And remember, the Huffington Post is supposed to be a progressive voice.
Yes.
And yet they're the ones who normalized writing for quote-unquote exposure, writing for free. I've been telling my interns now, especially, no matter where you go, insist on getting paid. Look, you're not going to be getting paid a dollar a word right off the start, but at least get paid something. Get paid what you're worth. Do not write for free. That was a horrible model. Too many people subscribe to it. And now in some way, there's a, how can I put it? There's a movement against that, but I wonder if it's too much, too little, too late.
And that also fits into this idea of journalism as a profit-making industry, right? Because if you are owned by somebody who's seeking to make profit, then you want to minimize your costs. Well, your costs are paying your journalists. And if you can minimize that, then you're set.
Yeah, but let's not romanticize that as well. From the very beginning, most of the reasons people did journalism anyway, at least for the owners, were to make money. Look at Los Angeles and this Chandler family, the Sulzbergers of New York Times, the Grahams of the Washington Post. But at least they were making so much money that at some point they're like, you know what? We don't really care what our reporters write for the most part, as long as they continue to make money. As I mentioned earlier with Rupert Murdoch and the Village Voice. Now, though, that you're not making as much money as you used to, now that's where you're really going to start cutting. I mean, you're seeing it. The LA Times, what was it? We're in 2017 right now. About 15 years ago, they had 1,200 staffers. Now they have about 650 or so. They're trying to unionize. That's amazing, because if you know anything about your journalism history, the LA Times was the most notoriously anti-union paper in the United States for nearly a century. So if they're now unionizing, then what does that have to say about the rest of the journalists, other journalists? They want to unionize because they view it as their last chance, as their last hope for some sort of a semblance of a journalism career that they could depend on for the rest of their life.
So let's talk about the issue of content control. You mentioned that when Murdoch bought Village Voice, he didn't care what the content was as long as it made money. What have you discovered in your quest now that you are basically an out-of-work journalist who resigned in protest for the kinds of demands that are put on journalists and what they can say, what they can write about, how they can express themselves?
See, I'm lucky because I have enough of a reputation where if every place that I've gone to, all my articles have been accepted. There's been minimal change. No one's told me you can't say that, but I'm lucky. I'm not a reporter who doesn't really have much of a name for themselves trying to pitch stories along with everyone else. So I've heard, I mean, you hear these horror stories, people writing for very little, people submitting things that are then quashed because it's taking on the powers that be. And again, that's not a sustainable model. I think journalists and any journalists out there, we need to start thinking of a new way of ownership for our own stories, for our own words, and frankly, for what we want to cover, whether it's a national model, regional model. And you see a lot of nonprofit entities trying to get into nonprofit journalism, like the Voice of San Diego, the Voice of OC. And I like what they do, but at the same time, journalism should be more about than just hard news. It has to be about culture. It has to be about food. It has to be about music. And of course, for me, from my perspective, at least, that's how the OC Weekly always was. But there, you weave some sort of politics through it. But you need that sort of coverage as well. Communities don't just exist on politics. So, the old saying, if the revolution doesn't let me dance, and I don't want to be a part of it.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because, of course, that's what draws people into, ordinary people into journalism, especially, when we do have bleak news coming out of our elected representatives. So on this issue of the ownership still. You mentioned we can't rely on the Jeff Bezoses of the world, but there are, you know, you have figures like Pierre Omidyar, who literally poured his independent wealth into creating The Intercept, which is today the home of some of our premier investigative journalists covering national news. Can progressive-minded, wealthy, let's just say sugar daddies, be the transitional, the bridge towards saving journalism?
The Intercept is great. They've done a lot of great stories. But again, you are at the beck and call of one person or a group of people who one day might say, you know what? I'm tired of this. This is not making money. Even billionaires at some point, billionaires got there because they don't like to lose money, even if it's like nickels and dimes for them. Eventually, they don't want to lose money. As a bridge, I could see that. And, you know, and I thank people like Pierre and others, and even Jeff Bezos, because the Washington Post has done a lot of great reporting. Yeah. I thank them for investing at least a little bit. And my challenge to them is make it somehow where the workers, your workers, can buy into this ownership so they have a stake in it. And it's not just all on one person.
So for journalists today, when we need good journalism more than ever, you have a huge force of out-of-work journalists or just graduating journalism students with few prospects, and you have a country that has become almost crippled because of the power of so-called fake news. Let's put this into a national context, Gustavo. The need for good, sustainable, and trustworthy journalism perhaps is greater today than ever before, right?
Absolutely. At a time where you have so many voices out there, there's so few legitimate voices, and there's so few people who are doing this for the greater good. Too much is just very, I mean, so much of the alt-right stuff out there is, it is the real fake news, yet that's the stuff that's gaining traction. And to me, that's the most important thing for those people who do want to support news. It has to be sustainable. You can't just create one Kickstarter account. Like a lot of people have asked me, oh, you should start your own, you know, your own news organization. I would love to do that. At the same time, though, it has to be sustainable. I'm not going to make people work for nothing. There has to be a living wage or close to a living wage. And unfortunately, that's going to take a lot. That takes a lot of money. And that, and you can't just do it for 1 month or 1 year. This is something you have to have at least a 5 year plan to make it sustainable. And I do think, though, especially now you're seeing more people subscribing to the New York Times, to the Washington Post, and wanting to give money.
Right. There the is, subscription model is an interesting one.
Yeah. There is, and I like the subscription model, but at the same time, again, you are at the beck and call and the whims of people. At some, if your subscription base just diminishes for whatever reason, then you're out of luck. And then what are you going to do after that? So there has to be, I think at this point, there has to be a combination of things. You do need the big donor, but you also need the small donors. You also need some sort of advertising base. But this is why it's important, whether on a national scale or a local scale, to make those connections to people who do want to support news and good news at that and progressive news at that.
And meanwhile, the bright parts of the world don't really have to worry about any of that because they are so busy promoting the agenda of the billionaire class that the billionaire class is quite happy to fund them unconditionally.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you see that with all of these online organizations, for the alt-right organizations, for the most part, they are being funded by a sugar daddy. And these are sugar daddies that they don't mind losing money. I mean, the great example was always the Washington Times, the Mooney newspaper that lost money year after year after year. But the people behind it didn't care because it was advancing their agenda. If you have an agenda, you don't care how much money you lose until you actually have that agenda normalize, and hence we have Trump.
The social media landscape today has also greatly impacted journalism. And I'm wondering if you've been getting suggestions from people to say, well, you could just start your own podcast and capitalize on your brand, get sponsors for your podcast. You know what I mean? Like where journalists turn into a one person, media outlets that are also chasing advertising, but this time as an individual rather than as part of a bigger institution.
Oh, yeah. Easier said than done. And I could easily do it. But again, at least in my case.
But why would you want to, right?
If I'm going to do something on my own, it's not just going to be me. I have to involve some of the people that I admire. And frankly, for the people who want to do it on their own, good for them, good luck and all that. But again, it's way easier said than done. Oh, yeah, start a podcast. Okay, well, if I'm going to put all this investment into it, where am I going to get the money to do that? And frankly, in my case, it's much easier for me to just be a freelancer or just work
for, you have a name, a reputation, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's just my case, and who knows? I'm not ruling anything out. Ultimately, I would like to do something on my own. I just need to think about it. And more, the most important thing for me, if I don't see it as being sustainable for the organization that I want to create, then I'm just not going to do it. I'm not going to ask people to join me if and risk their livelihood just for some, pie in the sky dream. It has to be sustainable one way or another.
Right. And as journalists, most of us have been there in that position, myself included, in the past several years, where, you want editorial freedom and you want a living wage. Not too much to ask for, but apparently in our media landscape today, it is, sadly.
Yeah, no. And again, so we are living in interesting times, that's to say, let's put it lightly. But I do believe that the public, especially with the demise of LA Weekly, the public is finally snapping into attention and thinking, okay, something is wrong with our media landscape. Something is wrong with the way media has been created. Something needs to happen. And because if not, again, if our media is not healthy one way or another, then you're going to see the ascent of people and institutions like Donald Trump and all of his cronies.
Yeah. So finally, what about the fact that in the national, at the federal level, you have the FCC doing away with net neutrality? How do you see that impacting independent progressive media outlets?
It's not just net neutrality. It's also ownership of television stations.
Right.
You're
Cross
seeing
ownership.
Right now. But it's all connected. You're seeing right now Sinclair Broadcasting buying local stations all across the United States. Here in Southern California, they're buying the Pioneer KTLA Channel 5, which pioneered local news, and are going to force them to put in these really bad propaganda pieces for the Trump agenda. No, I mean, with Trump, with Sessions, with McConnell and all of them, they are specifically going after progressive voices and make it easier for oligarchs to buy the means and ways of producing news.
Right. Again, so if there's a conspiracy, that's where it starts.
exactly. At the federal level, at the FCC. And they're going to say it all, media deregulation, that's going to lead to more voices. No, it's going to lead to more voices with money. And the people who don't have money, we're not going to have those big platforms the way they do. Again, vigilance is the price for having a free country, especially, and journalists, we're the people at the ramparts right there. If we're telling you there's problems ahead, pay attention to us and support us.
So what advice would you give somebody who is either just starting out in journalism at school or about to graduate with a degree in journalism?
If you want to make money, get into PR. But it's absolutely true. But if you are committed to comfort the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable, journalism is the place to be. It's going to be very, very hard. So you better have the wherewithal and frankly, the gumption to do it. But if you do it, it's going to be the most rewarding thing you could possibly do for your life.
Well, I can relate to that. Gustavo, thank you so much for joining us. Where's a good place for people to keep while, you are in between gigs? Keep abreast of what you're doing, what you're thinking about. Can you give out your Twitter handle, your Facebook, et cetera?
Yeah, Twitter would be best. I'm at Gustavo Arellano, all one word. And then on Facebook, I have a public page. That's facebook.com/Gustavo Arellano Writer.
And we'll post links to that from our website later today. Gustavo, thanks for all you have done in local media landscapes. And we hope to have you back on whenever you have a new thing starting.
Gracias. And same to you, Sonali.
Thank you so much. My guest has been Gustavo Arellano, former editor-in-chief of the OC Weekly, an Orange County-based weekly newspaper, where he started out as a food critic and the writer of a satirical advice column called Ask a Mexican. He eventually turned the column into an acclaimed book by the same name. His other books include Orange County, A Personal History, and Taco USA, How Mexican Food Conquered America. And he recently resigned from the OC Weekly after its new owners asked him to fire a number of staff writers. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.